This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Lau, CIO, Will Riley, Head of Solutions, and Ed Wicks, Head of Trading. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod.
Good morning, Max.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, with risk assets pulling back a bit from the rally in the year to date, today we're going to assess the current investment landscape while digging into a few longer term market themes. Sonia, an important development since our last call has been the surprising strength of US economic data in recent weeks. How does this affect our thinking about the near-term macro and market outlook? And is there anything else that's at the forefront of your thinking right now?
Yes, thank you, Max, and a very warm welcome to today's podcast. Before I start answering the question, I think we have to reflect that Friday this week marks the first anniversary of the Ukraine invasion. And although this is no longer the market dominant theme in terms of the direction of travel for risk assets, we should not forget the ongoing humanitarian crisis that is unfolding and clearly will be with us as it stands for quite some time, but more on that later. Now, as you said, risk assets have had a fabulous start to 2023, and it's worth trying to reflect on what are the key drivers here, because it's not long ago where we were still in the midst of a very gloomy outlook in terms of an inflationary shock that has been hitting the global economy, followed by obviously the thought process of when the monetary tightening that we have seen last year would lead to the inevitable economic slowdown and potentially the recession. So if you'd only looked at markets since the beginning of the year, you would be forgiven to think, where's the problem? Because we are seeing equities in particular demonstrating a very healthy attitude towards the backdrop, and we are seeing double-digit returns in quite a number of the markets. So the biggest question for investors right now is this sustainable, or are there risks around the corner that could bring that amazing start to a halt? And it's still the same drivers. Is the big question around, has inflation peaked? Because that will determine whether central banks can pivot, as we now say it so nicely in jargon, and whether we actually have seen the peak in interest rates for this cycle. This is the dominant factor. And clearly the narrative that has been emerging since the beginning of the year has been that actually a soft landing is possible. We have seen headline inflation coming down, and hence market very quickly jumping onto the pivot bandwagon saying, yep, it's all good, and we clearly can now buy into risk assets. The view we have is that it's probably a bit premature, and this is similar to what we said in our last podcast, and for the very simple reason that the Goldilocks scenario that the market is playing right now just feels wrong. We still have to work through an inflationary shock. And despite the fact that headline inflation is coming down, this was to be expected, because headline inflation has been predominantly driven by two drivers. The first one was the supply chain disruption on the back of the pandemic, and as such, obviously, goods price inflation that has been rampant in a number of key areas. And the second has been the energy crisis that unfolded globally on the back, obviously, and catalyzed by the invasion of Ukraine, which has been an additional driver of headline inflation. We always knew those two would normalize. And maybe one surprising element has been a rather mild winter here in Europe, which has led to a faster normalization of gas prices here in Europe, which clearly has a big impact on headline inflation. Now, as we know, central banks clearly will look at headline inflation, but will be far more interest in the structural drivers of inflation, i.e. core inflation. And here the picture is different. And you've alluded to the resilience in the US labor market and in the US data. And that clearly means that if that is the case, then core inflation might be far stickier than what the market would like. And I think the recent narrative of from central banks tells us as much, that yes, they are worried. And it's a little bit, we can't have it both ways. If the economy is more resilient, inflation might be stickier, meaning that the pivot is premature. If indeed the economic situation is weaker, then inflation can come down. But then again, then we have the economic picture that is not fitting in the picture. And if we now look at the market reaction function, again, we're finding ourselves in a situation where equity markets have reacted incredibly positive. We are now looking at an equity risk premium that is as expensive as it was back in 2007. So there's quite a lot of positive news priced in, whereas actually the bond market and rates in particular have now reacted to the latest narrative from central banks, and we have seen rates selling off. So something is not quite right here and doesn't fit. And it's the same narrative that we've said from the beginning. We are more cautious because we don't think that we have seen the full impact of one of the fastest and most dramatic rate hiking cycles in history. And we have to assume that the time lag is still relevant. And this means for either end of first half or early second half of this year, we do still expect the economy to slow down.
Well, thank you for that overview, Sonia, talking through the sort of catch-22 situation that markets face right now, why we're in such a different market environment to last year. That leads us very nicely to Ed. So we have seen a lot less volatility so far this year than in 2022, when there were some really unprecedented moves in a number of asset classes. How has market functioning and liquidity evolved since then?
Yeah, thanks, Max. So I guess what I would say at the outset is we've definitely seen volatility reset lower in Q1 so far, with VIX in the low 20s. I mean, that's more than 10 points off the Q4 highs. So quite a significant pullback there. Against that backdrop, I would say that equity markets have been functioning pretty well this year. We don't see too many issues, particularly with regard to the amount of addressable liquidity that's available. Turning to the FX markets, our impression there is that the market, again, is quite orderly. The agency protocols that we use, say things like algorithms, are working extremely well. And the risk transfer execution is also relatively frictionless. The fixed income is, as ever, more of a mixed bag. I would say in credit, we've seen a very good start to the year, with liquidity being supported by new issuance levels in particular. But in addition to that, we've also seen quite a few of our significant counterparties looking to proactively build further market share, particularly in investment grade credit. And that's also been underpinning some of the market segments. Turning to rates, I think the picture is even more complex. As we've said, you know, markets continue to debate where terminal interest rates settle. In the UK, government bond markets happily remain in a far better place than September and October of last year. More regular single-digit daily yield moves are a welcome sight. Liquidity still feels relatively patchy, however, and quite inconsistent. The level of supply in the UK is obviously a factor that will doubtless continue to weigh on market sentiment. And I would expect there to be a good deal of scrutiny around all the upcoming government auctions. In summary, though, if I look across all of our transaction costs this year, and that's across all asset classes, we continue to see quite a profound improvement. Broadly, across all those asset classes, we see costs rebounding quite significantly to more normalized levels that we last saw towards the end of H1 in 2022. So overall, quite a positive picture.
Thanks, Ed. It's always fascinating to hear from someone who's kind of out there every day trading. And I think our listeners will appreciate your understatement on some of the moves we saw last year. Look, in addition to trading, you also help oversee our liquidity strategies. How is the team positioning as rates move to levels that were almost unimaginable just a few years ago?
Yeah, it's a very good question. This year actually is quite different, as you would probably expect. If I go back to last year, our money market funds were certainly positioned around the key policy meeting dates, as you would expect. Over sort of the 6 month period, certainly the back end of last year, we were anticipating, along with the broader market, much larger than usual policy rate increments. And what we wanted to do was to be positioned to quickly pass through those higher rates to our investors. As we move through into 2023, however, what we see is that central banks have certainly tightened a lot now. And so our attention turns more to our expectations for that terminal rate and what that looks like for our funds. And I would say that in this environment of what I would categorize as more modest policy rate increases, what you can expect to see across our money market strategies is that the duration of those funds will move higher as we start to go through the year. What I would also add alongside that duration point is that the credit quality for our money market funds remains robust. The higher quality global banks within our investment universe are pretty well positioned for any recessionary downturn. So again, a fairly positive picture on the liquidity strategies front for this year.
Well, thank you very much for that overview, Ed. And I would just point our listeners to an upcoming blog post by Ross McDonald on both the opportunities and risks presented by money market strategies against the backdrop of rising interest rates that is due to drop any day now.
Will, the volatility that Ed was discussing just now was, of course, felt particularly keenly by our defined benefit clients. How are we working with schemes to ensure they are as resilient as possible in this market environment?
Thanks. And hello to everyone on the line now. Whilst we hope we won't see those unprecedented markets again, the reality is that the UK gilt market has a challenging time ahead of itself. If the banks stick to its plans of reducing its gilt holdings through QT by $80 billion a year, then we could see supply of up to $500 billion on a net basis hitting the markets over the next 2 years. So there are obviously some big questions around who is going to buy these gilts, just given the insurers and pension funds have historically been have accounted for the bulk of that buying. But with pension fund hedge ratios at high levels, it's difficult to see the sector stepping up to what is essentially more than 30% of the UK DB industry. In light of that, we are trying to work with our clients in largely four ways in terms of trying to enhance their portfolios. One, in lower leverage and enhanced resiliency within LDR portfolios is very much here to stay. And so the implications for portfolio construction are material. Understanding the liquidity within the portfolio and utilizing collateral waterfalls to better manage cash flows across the portfolio are now essential. Two, we're helping clients with suitable assets to pay pensions. So obviously there's an increased focus now on contractual cash flows within your asset choice. So things like buy and maintain portfolios or things where you can contribute to hedging without increasing leverage, they become essential in the construction of your portfolios. And then thinking about the three is thinking about the right mix of assets that can weather volatility, as well as provide adverse sources of return, while still helping with these collateral needs. So absolute return bond funds, funds with global allocations, but also who have access to other parts of liquidity are good examples. And then last but not least, one of the big areas we're focusing on with clients is thinking about the risks that need to be taken in order to ensure a smooth route to buyout. I know we'll probably touch on this later in the podcast, but given most schemes are better funded, thinking about how they're aligning themselves to insurers and those types of allocations will ultimately make that process materially more efficient and cheaper for them.
Well, thanks. Well, that's a really useful framework for thinking about these issues. How can a diverse mix of assets help DB schemes better weather the market turmoil, potential market turmoil in the future?
Yeah, so whilst there were, unfortunately, some pension funds that struggled with liquidity through the crisis, the large majority have seen these improvements in their funding ratios, largely due to the increase in yields. This happened throughout the last year, but we did see, almost 15% of schemes reaching more than full funding on a buy basis at the end of Q3. If you say the UK DB market is $1.5 trillion, you know, that's $225 billion that is now ready for buyout. Our own DB tracker for a scheme has now reached full funding and is bouncing around the 100% level. But it has seen moves from as low as 70% in March 2020 to now being fully funded. So it's that sort of volatility is what pension schemes now need to be thinking about. And so if you look at the pension risk transfer market, you know, that market historically has been a 30 billion market. And if you've got 225 chasing 30, it is going to be a bumper set of years for the next 3 to 5 years. Insurance companies are now talking 60 billion, so almost a doubling of that sort of that sort of capacity. But that is still 225 chasing 60. So it's getting to be quite a very busy year for that. So how do we go about doing that? Well, I think the reality is that investment risk that you were taking that allowed those funding levels to get to the 100% from, for example, 70 is now the sole risk that you actually need to be focusing on to make sure you're ready for buyout. And I think that means thinking about the assets that you hold, as well as then also thinking about the right interest rates, the right inflation, the right credit exposures across your portfolio, so you don't miss any of those opportunities should volatility, you know, come around. And then I think it's about aligning those assets to that of an insurer to make sure you are in a position to be able to transfer those assets across when you need to. Because essentially, most pension funds will be sitting with three types of assets, right? It would be ones that can HSBC across to the insurance company, one which is sitting in runoff and can actually and can be you know, passed or financed in the transaction, and then others that they unfortunately have to think about how they're going to sell those and get the appropriate sales price on them. And just given how closely we work with our sister insurance company, you know, this is obviously a massive focus for us in terms of helping consultants, clients understand these challenges and trying to put a plan in place, you know, to try and get them ready.
Thank you. Well, some very big numbers and of course, a very important issue for many of our institutional clients. Sonia, as you mentioned earlier, Friday is indeed the anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which started the tragic conflict that continues to this day. What have we learnt as investors about geopolitical risk and its interplay with markets since then?
Yes, obviously it is fair to say that markets right now are no longer discounting the immediate humanitarian tragedy, but that there's clear takeaways in terms of our understanding of potential geopolitical risks and how they can influence structural trends in the future. And as such, it is worth just taking a step back and thinking about the immediate impact that the invasion has created. And obviously, I'm referring to the global energy crisis, which has exposed the vulnerability of the global energy system and clearly has put a lot of pressure on European governments in particular to balance energy security with very ambitious net zero pathway plans. There were positive surprises as well. And if we look at Germany in particular, which was obviously called out very badly right at the beginning because of the overly dependent energy resourcing from Russia, but they have managed within a very short period of time. And I recall calls right at the outset of the conflict, which said that this would be a 3 to 5 year journey for Germany to wean itself off Russian gas. Well, they managed within under a year. And that is the surprising but interesting takeaway in terms of the adaptability of countries, the global system, to external shocks and what this means for us as investors in terms of understanding the opportunity set. And as such, although obviously during my introduction, I spent a lot of time on the short-term tension between growth and inflation, and this will of course, be the main driver of markets near term. But it is very important for investors to start looking beyond what will be the second and third quarter dominant drivers to think about the longer term structural themes that we have seen emerge over the past 2-3 years, because I include the pandemic and the takeaways from the pandemic in this understanding of long term structural drivers. Geopolitics undoubtedly will take a very different position in our understanding going forward than what it was over the past decades. And that is something where we probably don't have all the ingredient and all the insights yet, but we would be amiss to ignore that there will be fundamental shifts in the way how we have to think about a multipolar world in future. And the latest episodes about the spy balloons just shows us that this will be a constant factor in our understanding of multipolar relations. This is important because I've mentioned energy security. We should obviously talk about climate in that context, and obviously the tension that arose in the context of literally keeping the lights on versus very ambitious plans to decarbonize. And this is where a multipolar world might add extra complexity, because we know in order to achieve a global resolution on climate, we need a level of collaboration that we have never seen before, and gives us an indication on the necessary changes and the need to come together to the table, which might be even more difficult going forward, given everything else that is going on. But it is clear that the importance for markets will change. And the idea of tail risks that we've discussed a couple of times during previous podcasts is something that investors need to be far more aware of. I know they're difficult to price, but it is the way of an understanding of a risk return profile of different asset classes, regions, and hence within an asset allocation context that is very, very important. And I think coming back to your original question, the tragic conflict in Ukraine, as it stands, there's very little I have seen that would point to a real solution. It is very clear that the unanimous support from the West and NATO in particular clearly has ramped up over the past couple of days, but it is still difficult to see an immediate resolution, and even more so than a solution for what comes next and afterwards. As Ian Bremmer of Eurasia Group calls it, we are in a geopolitical recession. And I think that is a good way to describe of what's currently happening. And as such, investors just need to make sure we capture this in a way that is relevant for portfolios, although clearly inflation has been the most immediate impact because of the geopolitical situation.
Well, thank you for talking through those dynamics, Sonia, that sharing that longer term view. And I think your comments speak to our overall approach here of prepare, don't predict, and being humble as we digest new information. Ed, given our discussion today, a broader discussion about markets, how are you as a trading team planning to navigate what could indeed prove to be another volatile year?
Yeah, thanks. So I suppose my opening comment would be that, you know, my base case is that this year is not quite as volatile and the market isn't as dislocated as much as it was last year. That being said, as a team, we're obviously constantly thinking about how to navigate markets, and we absolutely believe there's always enhancements to be made. In terms of the year ahead, I think there's probably a number of things I would highlight that we're going to be focusing on. First of all, we have to continue to evaluate our access to liquidity. That's absolutely critical. If I look back to last year, we actually derived an awful lot of benefit from engaging and transacting with alternative liquidity providers. So the types of providers that are outside the traditional banks and brokers that you might expect. And I'd expect that we'll be looking to build on that this year, particularly in credit and equity markets. Our internal analysis shows that in certain market conditions and for a subset of our order flow, it's possible to achieve better outcomes actually when trading with these types of counterparties. So that's one thing we're going to be focused on. Second, I think it will be important this year to increase as well as refine our use of data. We absolutely recognize that data can be incredibly insightful during the trading process, in particular when it comes to things like counterparty selection. So we're going to be doing a lot of work to provide our traders with even more effective real-time decision support tools this year. The final thing that I would highlight as a focus for this year, I think, will be to strengthen further our global trading model. All three of our trading desks in Hong Kong, London, and Chicago played a major part in our success last year as we navigated those choppy markets. If I look ahead, we definitely want to build on that success. We want to expand our relatively nascent secondment program. We want to develop the culture, encourage cross-training, and ultimately add resource selectively where we think it's appropriate.
Great, thanks for that, Ed. And Sonia, as always, we've covered a lot of ground today. What are the key takeaways for investors? And is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, thank you, Max. Most importantly, I would like to reiterate the message that we shared actually at the last podcast, that we remain cautious for the very simple reason is that we think the interest rate cycle will work. And even if the economy is more resilient right now, it just means that inflation will prove stickier. And as such, we might see the pivot being pushed out, which clearly means that there is a risk to markets at levels where they currently trade. I would call out equities as particularly at risk simply because of the extremely positive and strong start we have seen to the year and valuation levels that simply are not commensurate with our expectations of a slowdown in the economy, and would reiterate what we said last time, that we think there will be better entry points. I think Colin Reedy, our head of active strategies, who joined us last time, said he thinks we will see 4% again on US treasuries. I think we're getting there, and we're getting there by the day. And it's simply obviously the tension and the balance between inflation and growth, and central banks will need to think about the longer term inflationary narrative and picture. And I think all of them have been very consistent in their messaging. They will do whatever it takes to bring inflation under control. And this is where the market probably got a little bit ahead of itself in terms of the understanding of the timing of the pivot. And we might just see now a bit of a rude awakening that this has been a bit premature. This is the immediate 2023 focus. I think, as we've highlighted before, there's a lot more going on, not only with regards to understanding the global risk backdrop, but the opportunity set as well. And as always, we would call out, although timing might seem very distinct this year as a factor of getting back into the market, but obviously it's not then just getting back into the market, is what you're buying will make a big difference in terms of the overall success.
Right, and of course it's always a good idea to listen to central bankers when they're saying they will do whatever it takes. Well look, finally, I would just like to ask you all, as we do every episode, what you've been watching, reading or listening to recently. I'll get the ball rolling and say I've been listening to an audiobook by Robert Harris. It's called Imperium, and it's about Cicero and ancient Roman politics, and it's a real page turner, and I'm enjoying it a lot. Ed, yes, please.
So I've been listening to an excellent podcast. We've been talking a lot about geopolitics, and this plays quite neatly into this podcast. It's called The Rest is Politics, and it's an excellent listen.
Thank you. I'm familiar with that. Alistair Campbell, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And Sonia?
A bit more lighthearted.
Yeah.
It's been half term after all. So I've watched a movie that I have watched before. It's the Wizard of Lies. And I think Wesley is the man of story. And Robert De Niro is just outstanding. And it's an amazing movie.
Oh, great. We'll add to the watch list. And Will?
So to add to the sort of list of podcasts, so I've been listening to someone called Lex Friedman. So he's really interesting, gets down really into the details of subjects. So there's a couple of really good ones on AI, and you know, speaking to the sort of lead I think he was the lead designer at Tesla, which is really interesting. And then another one on fusion, which has been another fascinating podcast as well. So.
Great. Thank you. Some great recommendations for our listeners. Well, that's an excellent point on which to end this month's call. Thank you, Sonia, Ed and Will, for your time today. And thank you to you, our clients and listeners, for joining us. Our next edition of the CIO call will be in March, when Sonia will be joined by Nick Stansbury and either James Carrick or Hetal Mehta, possibly both. In the meantime, you can read on our website our solutions outlook, which is hot off the press this week and covers many of the areas Will has just discussed. You can also find our latest update updates via our social media channels on the LGIM blog and, of course, here on LGIM Talks.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.